Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a very special treat for us today, you guys. My friend, Amy Rutherford, who is notoriously not very good about saying yes to these interviews, said yes to Pure Dog Talks. And I thought it was a very awesome opportunity because she just won Best Bred By at the AKC National Championship, which is a huge deal. And I really wanted to talk to Amy about lots and lots of stuff. So this is what we get to talk about tonight. All right, everybody. Trupanion wishes you and your kennel a very merry holiday and a happy new year. As breeders, we know the holidays are full of joy. But amidst the tinsel and treats, unexpected accidents or illnesses can happen in a heartbeat. In fact, 1 in 5 pets will have an unexpected veterinary visit in their first 30 days after going home. Don't let a holiday emergency dim the season for your puppy families. Join Trupanion's free breeder support program today and send your litters home with immediate medical insurance coverage, ensuring their new loved one is protected the moment they leave your care. Trupanion's Go Home Day offer is the ultimate gift of peace of mind for you and your new puppy families. Sign up now for Trupanion's Breeder Support Program by going to puredogtalk.com and clicking the link on my partners page to guarantee this season is merry, bright, and protected for every one of your precious pups. Welcome, Amy. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you. Good to be here.
I know. I'm so excited. Okay. So give us the 411 by the little bit of research that I could do because you don't ever talk to anybody. Your parents had Aussies like before they were a thing, right?
Correct. Yeah. My parents were basically horse people and they also had Australian Shepherds before they became AKC recognized. So that's when I was a small kid. So we usually went to horse shows on the weekends, but they also dabbled with the Australian Shepherds here and there. And I went to those dog shows with them and was too little to show them, but I was at those Aussie shows in the very beginning.
Right, right. Very cool. And so I want to know, this was my first question when I saw that, how'd you get from Aussies to Smooth Fox Terriers? Like, I mean, that seems like a stretch.
It's funny because it's really a vivid memory for me. And I couldn't even tell you what I had for dinner last night or what happened last weekend. So, but this is a vivid memory. I was probably 10 years old and we were living in Arizona at the time. And my parents were driving to San Angelo, Texas to go to a horse sale or to pick up a horse that they'd already bought or something. And it was in the winter. So we're in the pickup truck with the horse trailer behind us. And we start driving and we get snowed in San Angelo, Texas. And there happens to be an AKC dog show going on. So I don't remember where the final destination was. We were just stuck in San Angelo. So my dad's like, let's go to the dog show while we're here. So we went to the dog show and my vivid memory is actually sitting in the stands watching the dog show and seeing Smooth Fox Terriers in the ring. And I remember that day looking up to my parents and I was like, this is what I want to do. And I don't know how big the show actually was, but it felt super big just because I was used to an Aussie show where there was just one breed and not a lot of people. And so we went to this thing that was just all these people and all these dogs and all different dogs. It wasn't just that I wanted to do Smooth Fox Terriers. It's just, I saw the dog show and I was like, this is what I want to do. Because all along, you know, I'd been doing things with the horses. I did barrel racing as a kid and pole bending and all that kind of stuff. But I really felt something different when I went to the dog show and I thought, this is it, you know? So from that moment on, we started looking for an AKC dog for me to show. And the first dog wasn't a smooth fox terrier. The first breed was an Airedale, because when we were talking on the trip, my dad said, well, we always drive by the sign that says AKC Show Dogs Airedales. Let's go check that out. And so we went and we met the breeder, sat down in our living room and talked, and we ended up with an Airedale that wasn't very good. I showed it once or twice, and an Airedale is such a hard breed for a young kid to start out with.
Put down an Airedale when you're 10, I mean, that's not a thing.
Right.
That's not a thing. So put down an Airedale when you're 40, it's not a thing.
Yeah. right, exactly. And so got this Airedale puppy. He grew up, and I think he had one testicle. So then that one got replaced with another Airedale because that wasn't show quality. And that one I did manage to get one point on. And we went to Great Western Terrier Show when it was in Burbank. And the writing was on the wall that Airedale was, you know, like we needed to find something else for the grooming. And just my parents knew more than me and knew it wasn't the quality dog that, you know, was going to get us very far. We loved him, but we were just like, we're going to keep looking, you know. So went to Great Western, showed the Airedale. And just through word of mouth, we found out about a litter of smooth fox terriers that were in San Diego at the time, and they were 8 weeks old. And I don't know who my parents talked to find out about this, but basically we were like, we're going to go see these puppies on the way home from Great Western. So we went to this lady's house and we bought two puppies for $500 for both of them. And that was my own money because I sold like eggs and I did, you know, crazy stuff and as a kid and saved the money up. So I bought these two puppies, and I have to say whoever guided us to this breeder, who was a little old lady who didn't breed a lot or anything, but whoever ended up guiding us to her did a great job because they were really good quality dogs. And two pretty puppies that both I finished as puppies, both became group winners. Like the male finished in three weekends, the three sets of Arizona shows. He finished and got a group placement. And then I'm totally hooked at that point, you know, that was it. Yeah. Yeah. And they were really pretty puppies. And the bitch, my dogs today go back to her. So she was the beginning for me. And it's just so lucky that she was, you know, such a nice quality bitch. Mm-hmm. And the male was too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what I'm talking about? That kind of serendipity do, right?
Yeah. It takes that.
It does. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about your work as a handler. You said that's one of the things you wanted to do from like that very first dog show. You wanted to be a dog handler.
Well, yeah, for sure. Growing up in Arizona, I was born in Texas, but I lived in Arizona until I graduated high school. And there are more shows in Arizona now than there used to be then. But any chance we got, there was a show, we would go to them. And I think this was before I really showed those puppies very much. Mm-hmm. We were going to fun matches, and when fun matches were huge, you know. Yeah. And it's just kind of a thing of the past now, but it really did make a difference because we would take these young puppies to these fun matches. They would do well. We'd spend the whole weekend there meeting people. I mean, I think that's how I got so involved, you know, just from the ground up. And I know we don't have that available anymore, like the fun matches and that sort of thing, but I digress. So anyhow.
Should. All I'm going to say should. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and this is, we're talking now, I mean, you and I are about the same age. So this is going to be like the 80s.
Yeah, in the 80s.
Early 80s.
Yeah. And I remember going to those shows and just walking by rings full of Great Danes and Rottweilers and English Setters, just like a whole ring full of them. Mm-hmm. And just thinking, oh my God, this is so cool. You know, it was impressive. And then I walked by setups like Clay and Birgit, who had a big tent and probably 20 grooming tables and a dog on every single table grooming. And I remember them. And I remember seeing Woody with all the tabletops full of dogs and just sort of being like, this is a thing, like people could do this. This is what I want to do. So we figured out, like, I started working summers. I worked a summer for Bill and Taffy when I was 14, I think. Any chance I could get, I would help somebody on the weekend. I'd go and ask, can I help you this weekend, you know? And so then when I was 16, 17, I worked the summers for Eddie and Leslie Boys. They lived in Malibu at that time. And then as soon as I graduated high school, I decided I wanted to work full time as an assistant. So I worked full time for Eddie and Leslie, and they were in Malibu, but that was the time that they were moving to Northern California. So I was with them when they moved from Malibu to Grass Valley. And I stayed there for 9 years as an assistant. And that's, you know, I attribute my success right off the bat to really sticking it out as an assistant. Learning. They let me breed and show my own dogs during that time. So I was still breeding my smooths. I would have a smooth with me at all the dog shows that I could show, but I was learning all the animal husbandry, all the trimming, everything it takes, you know, involved in being an assistant and a dog handler. I learned working 9 hard years with them. So,
I mean, it's Eddie and Leslie. They were not 9 easy years.
Right.
Just,
But, you know, when I went out on my own, people knew who I was already, and I was able to pick up a few clients, and I wanted to stay in Northern California because I really liked it. And that's the way, if you want to be a handler, that's the way you should do it.
it's the only way. And I
Yeah.
think, you know, there's some of us, I'm one, you know, I worked piecemeal for Don Rogers or Bob Perry or whatever, but I never did the hard work because I went to college, right? And so it is a significant difference. Just for those of you all out there in listener land, you can be a good dog handler, but there's a difference between being a good dog handler and coming with that 9, 10 years of built-in connections, clients, know the people, know the routine, know the work, know the skill set. It's a very different thing. It does make a difference in the quality of your life as a dog handler.
If you survive it, that's
You know, I'm just gonna say.
good.
So we're gonna save the smiths for a separate conversation in a little bit, but just as a handler, you've had some really successful dogs. So I think of Ladybug, the water dog, as sort of like your breakout. Is that what you think? Or do you think there was somebody before that that I wasn't paying attention?
Well, as a handler, I mean, when I was an assistant is when I bred and owned Dover,
Right,
and
Dover.
I won 42 best in shows on that dog as an assistant. I mean, and then when I went out on my own as a handler, I showed a brother of his that won, I think, 14 best in shows. But then Ladybug was my first big winner that wasn't a terrier for sure and wasn't a, you know, smooth fox terrier. I had shown a couple water dogs that I put best in shows on before her, but not, you know, she was in a different league for sure.
She did a lot of winning.
Yeah, I think she won 25 best in shows and the group at Westminster. So,
Yes, that's the one I remember. That was early 2000s.
Yeah. She was a great dog. I mean, really great dog.
I mean, I knew you with Dover. Like, we run parallel tracks, right? So I knew who you were with Dover. But when I think of you from outside as like burst onto the scene was Ladybug. And then you had the poodle. You've had many, but Dino, right?
Dino was that was my first try at standard poodles, and he was a lot of fun to show.
I
But I showed
remember when you
like
got him, to
Scotties
be honest
and
with you. Oh, wow.
stuff.
That's
Well,
a real big difference between a smooth fox terrier, like your basic start, to a water dog, to a poodle. So that, talk about that. Talk about the work that you had to put in to do that, right? Because I think that's
Well,
so important.
that dog came about because there was a woman that had a French bulldog that she wanted me to finish. And so we finished that dog. And then she wasn't a dog show person, but she came to several of the dog shows. And it was when Timmy was showing the white standard poodle, Bitch. And so we'd show her the Frenchie, and she'd see this white standard poodle all the time. And she was just every weekend, I think I need a standard poodle. I think I want. And I'm like, no, you don't. You don't. And so she persisted. And I've just always been in awe of the Afterglow dogs and what Michael Gadsby had bred and everything. And, you know, seeing on Facebook dogs that he was showing, and they were showing Dino at that time. And so I said, well, there's this dog in England that is kind of exciting and winning over there. It's a long shot, but let's just see, you know. And they actually agreed to sell him over here for us to show. So then I'm like, oh my God, I really, you know, bit off more than I could chew. But luckily at the time, Olivia Hodgkinson was working for me and she knows how to do poodles. So it was just
Poodle girl.
another thing when the timing worked out, you know, in my favor. Otherwise, I would not have been able to do that dog, or I would have had to find somebody else to do it, because you just can't learn how to do a standard poodle overnight. Right. So that's how that dog came about. And I mean, I personally had a lot of fun showing him. He was a big, impressive dog and all that hair. He always looked great and he was a lot of fun to show. He ended up being a very controversial dog. Like, the poodle people didn't love him. The poodle people weren't welcoming to a new person showing their breed. I mean, it was a lot, all the grooming and stuff aside, it was a lot more than I thought it would be, just people wise with that dog. They had a hard time with it. So,
I remember.
yeah,
I
but
remember.
he did well. He was best
He was really
opposite
good, yeah.
PCA one year, and he won, I don't know how many best in shows. He won like 18 or 20 best in shows. I mean, he did well. So,
So talk a little bit about, because I think that's actually really important, and I don't think people really realize those kind of challenges. When you come in and it's apple, 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 and you've got the kumquat. Like the very different style dog, right? So talk about what are some suggestions, some tips, some tools that you used to be successful with a dog that was a kumquat in a ring full of apples.
Well, I think the most important thing, if you've got that sort of scenario going, is you have to believe in that dog 100%, because you can't convince anyone else to believe in it if you don't to start with. And I believed in that dog. Was he a big dog? Yes. I mean, that's what he got banged on the most. And did he have a perfect head? No. But he had so many good things about him. He could walk in the ring and put four legs on the ground every time on his own, boom, when everyone else is screwing their dog's legs into the ground. And he was a stallion-y dog. If you're going to have the odd man out, you need to believe in it, first of all, and sell what they've got, you know, and then hope that people will see that with you, you know, and sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't.
And there's a lot of planning that goes into that, learning who in the judging empire is going to appreciate a dog that just doesn't look like all the rest of them.
Yeah, dogs like that come with some built-in lovers and built-in haters, you know, because coming from England, he had a reputation already. He wasn't an unknown dog and his breeders weren't unknown or anything.
Right.
So, yeah, that's just a learning curve, learning where it's safe to go and not.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
All right, you guys, the next generation of specialized ProPlan nutrition is here. ProPlan Advant Edge is a new line of powerful triple-action formulas backed by years of research to deliver life-changing support for digestive health or healthy aging. These breakthrough formulations target the nutritional needs of adult dogs and include formulas for small breed and large breed adults. The first ProPlan line to harness three powerful biotics in one: ProPlan Advant Edge Digestive Support Plus Salmon and Oatmeal Formula draws on decades of microbiome research. Its prebiotic fiber promotes beneficial bacteria in the gut. Probiotics help maintain microbiome balance and promote resilience during naturally occurring stress. And postbiotics support gut health and ideal stool quality. Now, ProPlan Advant Edge Senior Support Plus Chicken and Rice Formula offers three-in-one support for cognition, immune health, and mobility for dogs age 7 and up. Cognitive health is derived from BrightMind technology, shown to promote memory, attention, and trainability. Immune health is from a specialized blend clinically proven to increase immune response,
and mobility and joint health come from glucosamine and EPA. Do you want to know more about how to give your dog the advantage, life-changing nutrition for digestive health or healthy aging? Visit purina.com/proplan/products/dogfood to learn more.
So then Ladybug, Dino, who was next up? I can't remember.
I don't know. I had lots of Scotties that won quite a bit. Yeah. Norfolk, so Barbara Miller, Norfolk, that, you know, several of those Montgomery winners and Best in Show winners. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge client for me, who I'm still showing for. You know, I've done quite well with my Norwich clients' dogs and several different Wheatons. And
you're the terrier queen.
Yeah. I love terriers. Yeah. Love them.
So we're still on handler, Amy. Talk about the challenges of, I started in smooths and now I'm doing poodles and water dogs, and you had an Irish water spaniel, like, got a lot of hair. So talk about, like, if you're talking to someone that wants to try a new thing, like, I started in short hairs, but I want to have an Afghan, like, right? Like, whatever it is. What are three good tips for trying something new and hard?
Well, when I was coming up, I was always told, and I believe this, and I still do, that if you can learn to trim a terrier, you can trim anything. Mm-hmm. And so that was always part of the motivation for going and working so hard at learning the terriers. Mm-hmm. And so when I worked at Eddie and Leslie's and we were trimming, I mean, yes, I'm a smooth person, but I was there trimming all the dogs, as many dogs as I could. Wires and Lakelands and Welsh and everything that he had. But when I did go out on my own, I did get hired to show dogs that I hadn't, breeds I hadn't touched at all.
Right.
So that's when you start looking for who's really good at this breed and who can I go to for help, you know, and you get the dog and you do everything that you can on your own and get it to a certain point. And then you take it to that person and say, here you go. What do you think? What can I improve upon? So it's key to be able to go find those people that can help you, you know, and I used to trim, pull out when you get kennel review or terrier type, all the pictures, have them all over my, you know, now they're just sitting on your phone, but then they used to just be on your mirror. And this is what I'm going to try and get it to look like. And you just keep working on it till you get it there. And a lot of times you think you've got it right at home when you've trimmed it, then you get to the dog show and you're like, oh, I got to change this. I got to take more hair off. And it's just always a learning process. I mean, still to this day on everything. So
don't quit learning, right? Like we keep learning every day.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay. So best day at the dog show as a handler, worst day at the dog show as a handler.
The best, I mean, winning the group at Westminster was a huge, huge thing with Ladybug. For sure. And I don't know, every time I win a breed at Montgomery County I've won with several different breeds. That's huge. I mean, those are their national specialties, or any national for that matter. So those are always the best days. The worst day, I don't know. There's disappointment along the way. And some days you're showing and you really think someone's going to like this dog or will go well, or you've prepared something and it just sort of falls apart. And I mean, so I try not to stay focused on that. Just keep going forward.
See, that's what I want people to hear. Do not focus on the negative.
Right. You learn from it.
Take away. Pro tip. Take away. Learn from it and move on.
Yeah.
Okay. Dog breeder, Amy. Best bred by exhibitor at EAKC National Championship. Huge deal. You were in there with a lot of really fabulous breeders.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So talk about that a minute.
Well, that, I mean, I'm super proud of Wager. And so I came out of the ring and somebody said, did you think you'd win that? And I was like, well, every time I show him, I'm like, I think I have a chance. So, you know, I didn't think I was going to win that. You could tell by the look on my face when I won, I was shocked. But yeah, I mean, that's huge. To me, that's just like going best in show there, really. I mean, because the lineup, could any of those dogs could have won their group there. Or
some of them did.
Yeah. And you feel that when you're in that ring, you're like, whoa, this is a big deal. And it was just super exciting. I had never shown a dog to Tom Cohen before, and he judged terriers. So, you know, you're just going in and just proud to show your dog, basically. Right. And it was awesome. Yeah. I mean, just winning the Bred by Terrier group is huge there. There's lots of big winning dogs and great breeders, and it's an honor every time. And he won the Terrier group there last year, and he was just a baby last year. Okay. Yeah. So this was his second time. And so it's just really fun and an honor.
It is. So now let's talk about how did you get to Wager, right? Because he's how many generations for you? Seven, eight?
Seven on the bitch side. And on the dog side, I think he's six.
Okay. You know. How do you get there? How do you get from, I bought this little bitch from this random little old lady in South California. And 30 years later, here I am, right? So how does that go?
Well, I don't know. A lot of it's luck, starting out with good dogs. But it probably took me 10 years to, you know, if I started when I bought that puppy bitch and I was 11, 12 years old, it took me till I was in my early 20s to really get something. Yeah. I mean, I had champions, I was finishing dogs, but when it really changed for me, I went to Montgomery one year with something I bred and it wasn't very good or competitive. I don't remember which dog it was, but it wasn't really good or competitive. And I was like, okay, next time I come back here, I want something that is competitive back here. And I looked, I saw dogs back there that I wanted to breed to. And the next time I went, I had a bitch that went back there and she was best of winners a couple of days, not at Montgomery, but at Devon and Hatboro. And that weekend is the big weekend to me, Montgomery. Like I breed my dogs. I breed every year in hopes that I have something good enough to take back there and to do well back there with. And as soon as Montgomery's over, I'm like, 365 days. Here we go.
I'll make a new one. So was there a particular sire? Was there a particular nick? Was it just a continuation of line breeding? What took you from doing okay, making champions to really killing it?
Well, when I bought the first puppy, I did end up breeding her to Tarp the Brat a couple times. So the top producer of all time and Smooth. Mm-hmm. And it's just, my parents had a mind for that, like breed to the best you can find. Just because we're in Arizona, we're not going to breed to the other dog that's in Arizona. Like if the Brat's in Southern California, we're going to go to Southern California and breed to the Brat. And so we did. So we got something from that and kept that and then just worked on and on and on. And then I went to Montgomery one year and I saw his name was Dan Greenwald and he had a couple of dogs I absolutely loved. Yeah, he was from Minnesota.
Remember his dogs, yeah.
And so his dogs really stood out to me. And I was in my 20s then, I think mid-20s probably. His dogs really stood out because when I went and saw them, they had bone like I'd never seen before, bone and feet and outline. And there was also a dog that Gabriel showed in Southern California that had an outline, White Hunter, that was different from everything else. And I was just drawn to it. So there were just certain things I was drawn to early on. And so I saw those dogs of Dan Greenwald's and I thought, that's what I want. I've got to get that. So I bred to his dog, Tug, had really nice puppies out of that. I tried really hard to buy a bitch from him that he wouldn't part with. So I somehow found the sister to that he had sold into a pet home and I bought it. It didn't work out. It wasn't pretty, but I bred it anyway. And she wasn't a great producer, but I was just trying. I was just I'm going to keep trying till I get it. But when I bred to his dog, Tug, I really did get something. That was the beginning of putting my dogs on a different level. And some people were bringing in some English dogs. There's a kennel in England, very famous Ryber. And I loved the look of those dogs. I think I just early on had really a strong opinion of what I was looking for. And some good mentors, like, you know, and the Smooth people, unlike the poodle people, I was pretty embraced by a lot of the Smooth people when I was a kid, you know, and I think luckily, like the good breeders would let me breed to their dogs, give me their dogs. Like I never bought a dog until I was maybe 30. Like if I said, oh, I like that, here, have it. Yeah. You know, Debbie Butt, Tony Giles gave dogs because they were really into the Smooths and had great Smooths. And if I wanted it, they'd give it to me. And they did. Or breed to their dogs. I mean, that's just unheard of today. And that gave me a leg up. And working for Eddie and him seeing my dogs, he would be like, that's not good enough. Or that is, you know, and just training my eye. I was helped by a lot of people, helped along. But I also think I've just always been attracted to a certain look of the smooth, and that's what I've gone for, and it's happened. So I got lucky with, I don't know if it's lucky, but I just kept going. So I kept building on the Dan Greenwald, the Proud Fox, which is Debbie and Tony, brought in some English dogs, the Dover Sire. I had a bitch that was on my breeding. And so Dover Sire was a dog that he had an English mother. So he was a nice dog bred in California. And Dick Cefacool, who was used to be a client of Woody's, bought this dog. So anyway, Woody didn't want the dog. So Dick came to me because I saw him just walking around a dog show. I'm like, that's really pretty. He was really all white, just a little marking on his head. Looked like he came from England. I'm like, that's so pretty. So Dick came up to me at a dog show and he said, you know, that dog that you liked, I'm not going to keep him. Do you want him? And I said, yes. And that's how I got Dover, because I bred my bitch to that dog and Dover was born. And Dover stood out from the moment he was born. I know it sounds crazy, but he really did. He was just totally different from the get-go and beautiful. And that's the dog. I took him to Montgomery when he was 15 months old, and it was when Montgomery was only 3 days. So Hapro, Devon, Montgomery. So the first, I'm still an assistant. So the Hapro, I took him up and showed him, and he went second in reserve. Okay. You know, I was noticing people are like coming to look at this dog, you know, and I thought he was really good, but this is the first real one I'd had, you know, back there. So people are coming up looking at him. And so Eddie's like, people are talking about this dog. So Eddie goes, I want to show him tomorrow. So I'm like, okay, you show him tomorrow. So it was Mrs. Warner, and he didn't place in the open class for some reason. So he didn't place, but even more people were coming to see him by the second day. So the third day is Montgomery County, and I take him up to show him in sweepstakes, and it's under Dan Krudowski, who's the terrier type guy. Oh, so everybody loves Dan. So Dan gives him the best in sweepstakes right away. And this is when there were 180 smooth fox terriers in the regular classes, and Bill Potter did the breed that year. And Bill Potter gave him Winner's Dog from the, I guess I had him in open, even though he was 15 months old. And I just started bawling. Like, I'm just like, this was my dream, you know, to have a dog. Right. I could come here. Right. And went. But he goes, Winner's Dog. And so then I go back to the setup because they have to do all the bitches. And I'm doing my job back there. And then Eddie and Leslie are like, we've got this. You just go show your dog in the breed, you know. And so I go back. I show my dog in the breed. I win the breed from the classes. And then I'm like really bawling because this is over almost 200 smooths.
Yeah.
And then the group's going in. And he goes second in the group under Harry O'Donohue, who's a wire breeder. And the dog, he was just, all I remember is that he just went in there and he just stood and looked at everything around. People were just like drawn to him, and it set him off. Like, he won 2 best in shows from the classes the next weekend, and then he won 42 best in shows right after that.
So what year was that? I'm trying to remember.
I think that was 89. Maybe.
It was gonna say,
yeah,
90 something. Yeah. So up until that point, you had been breeding sort of on, from the sounds of what you're telling me, phenotype, just something that matched the look that you're going for. And did you continue with that, or did you go and do more line breeding, or how did you continue on to get to Wager?
Well, Dover ended up being an amazing sire as well. He's the number 3 top producer of all time. So he's got 81 champions. And so he was a great producer, and he's loosely line bred. But the thing about his pedigree, when you look at it, and it was really unintentional, is that he is the best of like all the big kennels breeding is right there. Like, every top breeder is in his pedigree. And it sounds corny, but I've always said, I don't feel like I bred Dover. He is the culmination of a lot of good breeders, like from England and from here, from all the best of the old California lines and the East Coast. And I mean, his pedigree was made to be a good producer, just of what's the dogs that were behind him. And they were all big producers. Like, the top 4 producers are all in his pedigree.
Right.
So he was made to be a producer. So he was started being used by other people, was producing nicely. And then I think it's kind of the problem I'm having with Wager now is I didn't have anything myself I could read to him.
Right.
Everything was so, it was all too close in my mind. So I went out, I knew somebody that bred really nice smooths that were the look that I liked again. Her name was Donna Knipes. She's not with us anymore, but Rapidan was her kennel name. And I said, I want to buy a bitch from you that I can breed to Dover. And she sold me a really beautiful bitch that was different breeding. It wasn't the same as him at all. Maybe four generations back, there were dogs in common, but I bought this bitch, bred her to Dover, and that produced Gracie and Whitey. And Gracie is the number two top winning bitch of all time. She has 40 best in shows. And then Whitey, the son, a good dog, his record isn't in showing. That just was like clicked that the bitch I bought bred to Dover was the secret sauce. He was at that show and he's a very big, handsome dog. So I decided from his offspring, not so much him, that I would wanted to give it a try and breed my bitch to this dog. And so again, you know, he's living in Tucson, Arizona. This was before COVID. So this was like 2017, I would say. So called the lady that had him and said, I have this bitch I want to breed to Ink. And so she said, I'll just send Ink to you. His sperm's not very good. So it's hard to ship semen to you. He's old, you know, the last few breedings haven't taken, blah, 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 whatever. And so I'm like, okay, great. So I have, my bitch is old. I have an older dog with not hot semen. So luckily up the road from me is Shannon Stone and Shannon and Sydney, who I think are the best. And so we're at the Wine Country show and I'm like, here you go. I wasn't able to do a breeding on my own. I couldn't get them tied. So I'm like, here's the deal. Just make it happen, you know. So they take him.
Make a baby.
Yeah. They take him and they collect him and they give both of them back to me. And they said, I don't know if this is going to work because we did not get very much semen. What we got wasn't very good, but we're going to try. So I'm like, okay, that's all we can do. And so she got pregnant. So that was a little miracle in and of itself. And so that bitch got pregnant and produced three puppies. And all three champions. And then I kept two for a little longer. Linda is Wager's aunt. And she got best in show the first time I showed her as a puppy. Or Aunt Katona. And I was another picture with my mouth just wide open. But anyhow, her sister, who I don't believe is as nice as Linda, a tan and white bitch, but pretty. She, I bred to Frozen Semen, a Dover son that someone had gifted me. I wasn't looking for this semen. And they just said, we've been holding on to this for a long time. You take it. And I was like, oh, interesting. So I just bred that bitch to a Dover son, Frozen Semen. And there I got Wager's mother. And so...
And is that
Sia's sister?
Okay.
Sia's Wager's out of Sia's sister. And again, it's like Wager's mother isn't as nice as her sister, but I always hold on to two bitches if I can. You know, you don't know which one's going to be the producer. And that just proved the point right there. The bitch, I mean, she was a nice quality bitch, but she wasn't a special like Sia was, but she's the one that's the producer and she produced Wager. So I missed a generation there because during COVID, I bred to my old Dover semen. And that was with Shannon and Sydney again, because Wager's tightly bred. So that's one side of it was the Linda and the other side was the Dover semen. And so anyhow, there were just a few little miracles that happened that helped me get Wager because his grandfather, Ink, when, you know, that ended up working, there was some semen given to me that ended up being pretty great. And then during COVID, I was looking, you know, no dog shows. So I'm looking, what am I spending my money on? You know, and so there's Dover's semen in storage. And I'm like, it's never worked. I'd sold it to people. I tried it myself. It never worked. He was a great producer on his own, but the semen, it was stored so long ago. And for whatever reason, I didn't store enough of it. It never worked for anybody. And we use the best vets in the country. And so I'm like, okay, there's just a little bit left. I had a maiden bitch, a great granddaughter.
So breaking all the rules, right? Let's take this really valuable semen and dump it into a maiden bitch. Genius.
I just was like, it's not going to work, you know, and I'm going to stop spending my money on this.
Right.
And so I took that. I let Shannon and Sydney do all the timing. Just you do whatever you think. Mm. And that bitch got pregnant. And when I took her for, I don't ever do this, but I took her in for a sonogram to see, and they were like, yeah, there's four puppies in there. I burst out into tears. I'm like, I never thought I would see this dog come back. Mm. And I stayed up all night. The bitch was in labor, and all night long, she's scratching around the Dover litter. And so I was finally like on the phone to the vet. I'm like, when you get there, I'm coming in. We need to have a C-section. And so then she popped one out. And then she had all had these puppies, and they were beautiful and living. And it was just like a miracle to get puppies out of that dog again. The dog that I had that really put me on the map when, you know, I was in my 20s, and to have this come back. And that's Wager's mother.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's a big part of why I love breeding the Smooths. They're just, it's just so sentimental too. You know, you look in their eyes and you see the generations, you know, like I saw that dog that I had when I was 22.
I know
old.
You.
Yeah.
You look in their eyes, you're like, I know you.
Yeah.
I've seen you before.
Yes.
I think that is 100%. Okay. So final question. I even gave you a heads up. I'm not always that nice to people. So, you know, you're really my friend. One of my favorites is playing the Your Best in Show lineup. We've done it with a lot of people, but you try to, you know, tailor it for each person. So I'm going to say you, Amy Rutherford, are judging Best in Show at Montgomery Kennel Club. And you can choose from every dog you have ever seen or wished you had seen. What are your top four dogs and who goes best in show?
Okay. Well, I did get the heads up, so I was thinking about it. And that's a hard question.
It is.
Really hard.
It is.
I'm going to go with dogs that I've seen before. Okay. So I have to say Mick, the Kerry yes. Blue, because he's on everybody's top list of greatest dogs
and he should
of all
be.
Time. Yeah, absolutely. And so Mick's there. The dog that left a huge impression on me when I was young, I don't remember how long ago this was, but was Willem the Conqueror, the Norwich,
yes.
Norwich Peter Green Show. And he went best in show twice at Montgomery. And when I saw him, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I'd love to see him today with like the eyes I have now after having shown so many Norwiches, but I loved that dog and he made a huge impression on me. The next dog would be Killick of the Mess. His name was Trevor, and he was a wire that Eddie showed. He was imported from England when I was an assistant, and he was best in show at Montgomery 1 year too when I was an assistant. And he may not be the greatest wire of all time, but that dog, the first time I saw him, gave me chills, and I adored that dog. I loved everything about that dog, so he's one of my favorites. And then, I mean, if I'm the judge, I'm going to put Wager in there too.
Well,
so.
Sure. Wager, not Dover. Why Wager, not Dover?
Honestly, I get asked this a lot. And to me, I actually feel guilty saying it, but Wager is a better dog than Dover. Okay. And I never thought it would happen. But I truly believe that he's the best dog I've bred. And he's the best dog I've shown. So I put him in there too. He was second last year. So if I'm judging, you know, the Smooths gonna win.
You know, the privilege. It's a thing. Okay, but now you have to say who goes best in show.
The Smooth.
The Smooth. Okay.
I'm judging, so of course. No, I love.
Oh my God, I love
all the. It's a hard question.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, and each of them for different reasons. You mm-hmm. know, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, I could do this like all night long, but I'm sure it's like the night before Christmas Eve, so I feel like we both probably have things to do.
Right.
I'm supposed to be making a cheesecake right now. So.
Oh, God.
I know, right? Anyway, Amy, thank you. I really appreciate it. I love talking to you. You have yourself a Merry Christmas, all right?
You too. Okay, thanks, Laura.
All right, you guys. I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health, whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough.
This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life, you know, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.